Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It's Tuesday, February 6th. Derek Van Riper here with Eno Saris. On this episode, we begin the process of team previews. We have three team previews ready to go for this episode, focusing on the AL West today. So lots of ground to cover as we get to the Rangers, the Angels, and the A's. Why start with the Rangers? Well, they're the defending champions, so we'll get to those in just a couple of minutes. And as is often the case this time of year, you get ready to start a show, you go make sure one last time there's no breaking news, and there is a little bit of breaking news. Clayton Kershaw has signed a one-year contract to return to the Dodgers. I don't know if we're going to see Clayton Kershaw pitch until the late summer at the earliest, but he's officially back as a Dodger for the upcoming season.
Yeah, his doctor mentioned 4 to 6 month recovery times, and so you might think you get a couple months out of him this coming season. I did try my hand at some Google doctoring, and what I found found like more like 15 to 17 month recovery times. I mean, it was the shoulder surgery. I mean, those are always worse than elbow surgeries. So I don't know that I think he's going to pitch a lot this year. And you said there was a player option, perhaps.
Yeah, for 2025. That's a weird year to say.
By the way, also, I am just playing at a doctor when I do these Google searches, as is a reader pointed out. I had the wrong ankles for Correa. So the plantar fasciitis on the left has nothing to do with the fractured tibia and, you know, ankle surgery that he had on the right. So there's that for you.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, actually, what's funny is I want to push back just a tiny bit. Like, your body is like, you know, likes equilibrium. So, you know, you can have a problem on one side that creates a problem on the other side.
You compensate, mechanics adjust, and new problem is formed.
I did have the legs wrong, so
that's why you're a Google doctor and not an actual
not
physician.
An actual one, yeah.
Makes sense. Other news that happened actually overnight: Jake Junis is a Brewer now. I called for more roster spackle for this Brewers rotation, and they delivered.
And you got it immediately.
It didn't even take a day. That's incredible. I mean, how much can he throw that slider? Because that's what it comes down to.
He's throwing it more and more, and it's a top 15 slider by Stuff Plus, and you know, so he, you know, the Giants were like, hey, it's really good by the models, you can throw it more and more. The other pitches are all below average, and that's how you get kind of Wade Miley-esque. You know, it's like one really good pitch that he can throw for strikes or for swinging strikes. So, you know, it's kind of useful in two different ways. And then some other pitches, they're going to just try and mix around that one just to keep you from sitting slider on every pitch.
We'll see if it works. There is a group chat that exists in which I said I would eat a hat if Jake Junis and Corbin Burns both throw over 100 innings this year and Junis beats Burns in both ERA and WHIP. To which someone in the group chat said, the ERA is actually kind of like, they kind of gave me the nudge, like, hey, you're pushing it with the ERA a little bit.
Also, like, you could see a season where Jake Judas throws 101 kind of relief innings, you know, and they never let him see like the fifth inning, and you know what I mean? And they just use him the very best way they can and just coax that out of him. I mean, you know, he was kind of central to the much hated plans for the Giants to kind of, you know, do the Rays thing, you know, to the extent that they did. But even then, a 3.87 ERA in 86 innings, where, again, he wasn't allowed to go deep in games, and he wasn't allowed to see a ton of lefties and stuff like that.
Curious to see how it really works out. I think the 100-ish inning workload is probably the optimal workload, but the message was Junis was signed to be a starter, at least to begin the season. So we'll have to see how it actually plays out over the course of a full season in that role. It's actually a great day to start team previews because the PECOTA standings at Baseball Prospectus came out, and they're just a great snapshot of simulating the season, getting some expected results. Always gets people chirping on Twitter, as it is. Let's start with the defending champions, our first team preview for 2024, the Texas Rangers. PECOTA has them at 86.2 wins in the simulation.
It'll be kind of tough to hit that mark.
It's going to be very hard to hit 86.2. But that's like, they got the Astros at 95. Like, this still, by projection, is the Astros division. And I know, especially for a team that just won the World Series, it was a really quiet winter for the Rangers. They're among the teams that are facing the uncertainty around their TV deal. They made huge splashes in recent off seasons with Seager and Semien signings, and they've got young talent coming up on the roster. But when the off season started, we were at First Pitch Arizona, and one of our friends and listeners, Will Garofalo, said, Josh Hader's going to the Rangers. It just makes too much sense. I said, Will, you're absolutely right. It does make too much sense because it's a move they can justify that is a big spend that isn't the nine-figure mega deal, right? They could still do something, keep the momentum, and continue their run. And they could still do it without Josh Hader, but it is like an extra little punch in the ribs for the Rangers that he ended up in Houston, given how badly they could have used an elite reliever to close out games in Texas.
I like some of the guys there. I like Leclerc. He's had some really bad command some years. I like Sabores. In fact, you know, we have a pretty good projection for him of like low threes ERA projection because of his stuff. And we saw how good he can be in the playoffs. I'm a little surprised when I go to his player page and I'm like, wow, it's been a 5-6 ERA over the last 2 years. Like, I don't really understand that from the eye test. Like, his Sierra has been 3 the last 2 years and throws 97 with a great hard breaking ball. But, you know, so I like him, but there's obviously some question marks about him. Robertson's super old. Kirby Yates is pretty old, and like, the fastball's going down. But I love Kirby Yates' splitter. I love Robertson's breaking ball. You know, Jonathan Hernandez can throw really hard. So there are guys in that bullpen that can be the closer. I think it'll be Leclerc, but even if it's not Leclerc, they have some other options. So it's not a terrible bullpen. It's just not one that, you know, you'd circle and point out as a strength, I guess.
Yeah, and I think even their good relievers have the elevated walk rate without the disgusting K rate that comes with it. I think of Philadelphia as a team that has the filthy stuff, shaky control bullpen.
Yeah, they got some commonalities with that.
But the Rangers are like a notch below in terms of
stuff,
filthiness and stuff. And I wonder how much that's going to come back to potentially bite them. And then the other thing about the Rangers, just thinking about their pitching staff, right? I mean, Jacob deGrom coming back from Tommy John surgery, so maybe we'll see him in the late summer. Max Scherzer's coming back from a significant injury. They've got John Gray, who has struggled to complete a lot of healthy seasons in his career. Andrew Heaney and Nathan Eovaldi. It's a very high injury risk group of pitchers. And without DeGrom, it's sort of like, okay, kind of like the bullpen. It's not bad, but it's not great. And I don't know how long you can get away with that that's the one part of the, of their system where I feel like there's not a lot of help on the way. They're trending into being one of those organizations that's really well built, but also needs to find a way to add pitching. Not unlike what we're seeing in Baltimore, where they just traded for Corbin Burns.
Yeah, and their solution so far has been the free agency market, and I think they've done well with Nathan Eovaldi, and John Gray is a solid guy, so it's giving them the kind of the innings they need. Unfortunately, the other side of their free agent or sort of trade acquisition approach has shown what happens when you bet on older pitchers. They get hurt. And so they've got this really weird season coming where they'll be struggling to put together a rotation at the beginning of the season. And then theoretically, depending on how everyone comes back together, they might have Tyler Molly, Jacob DeGrom, and Max Scherzer to add to their rotation as the season goes on. Maybe they'll just get it perfectly right, and all the guys who are healthy at the beginning of the season are hurt at the end of the season, and they just always somehow magically have five starters. There is a universe where that happens. But I think there'll be a lot of pressure on a couple of glue guys that are not even on the top of the sort of projections table. And so the guys I'm looking at are Cody Bradford and Owen White. And I guess one of these guys is going to make, you can throw Jack Leiter in there, but his problems have been kind of massive in terms of command. There was a little bit of daylight at the end of the season where he came back and the command wasn't as bad. So maybe he has made that adjustment. One of those three guys should be in the opening day rotation. And if there's going to be a bet from me on who it's going to be, it's actually Cody Bradford, who I didn't even put in my rankings, and I'm feeling like maybe I should have. The thing that Cody Bradford has going for him is that he commands all four of his pitches at an above average rate. And, in terms of like how nasty those pitches are, only the four seam and the changeup are average-ish. But if you take a slider, like for example, his slider has a 70 stuff plus, but a 105 location plus. By pitching plus, that's a 97. That's not a terrible pitch. It's a pitch that he has to locate to get value out of, but he locates it fairly well. So you've got it's kind of a polished, if relatively unexciting by regular projections, it's a polished approach, one that won't hurt you with a ton of walks. I know he throws 90. I think he's going to be the fifth starter in that rotation to begin the season. And again, because of the way the season is shaped, maybe he just throws like 140 innings for them this year.
Yeah, it's very possible. I could see him having a similar value to them this season that Dane Dunning had a year ago. And a lot of the ways you just described Bradford, like that would apply to Dane Dunning. He's not
exactly
overwhelming you, but he's got a lot of pitches. He locates them well enough. It seems to work, right? So all you have to do is find a way to just get to the point where the big arms are back and healthy. And so far as Scherzer's recovery goes, at least things have progressed pretty well. He had surgery to repair a herniated disc this offseason. So far, no setbacks. But the target's really more of June or July. So it could even be the All-Star break before we see Scherzer back in this rotation again. And if it's Leiter or for someone else in this organization that steps up among the young guys, they need something like that in a pretty big way, just because of the way these have kind of all stacked together. You mentioned the bullpen. I think Leclerc is the guy for now for chasing saves. I think the presence of David Robertson gives them a pretty decent insurance policy. Robertson is definitely like capital O old at this stage, but he's still very effective. And I think he'd be the first guy to get the chance in the ninth inning if they made a change. Spores might still be that longer term if everything starts to come together and he's getting more consistently good results throughout the year. He could be the guy that ends the year with the job, even if Robertson gets the first crack at replacing Leclerc.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to think about it. Also think about the manager. I think Bruce Bochy enjoys having a closer with a capital C. He's not really a committee guy, but he does change his usage patterns. And so we do have this little bit of signal about how much he used Josh Spores in huge moments in the playoffs and how important Spores was there. So Dave Robertson's going to be a new guy coming into the fold. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Spores is getting eighth inning holds and being in at least a co-setup guy behind Leclerc starting from day one.
Could definitely see something like that come together as well. Why was this team so good last year? Well, they scored a lot of runs, right? This is a really strong position player core. We do have some recent news on Corey Seager that we haven't really talked about on the pod. He just had surgery for a sports hernia recently. So that could easily cost him a little bit of time when the season begins. I imagine the kind of second round ADP we've seen on him in drafts will slide just a little bit as we get more information on that. But looking at their projections, these are the hitter projections from the Bat X, which you can go get over at Fangraphs. You want to check that out. Derek Cardi does a great job with these projections. This is a strong group. Like, any top nine you put together is going to be about as good as any outside of maybe the Dodgers and Braves. That's the level the Rangers can perform on. And then they got the young talent kind of supplementing the veterans, right? We saw Evan Carter last year late in the season and in the playoffs. And we're probably going to see a lot of Wyatt Langford in 2024 as well.
Yeah, I know that he's kind of in some depth charts already listed as a starter for them. Fangraphs, for instance, he's the number one DH. Wyatt Langford is. And they're basically betting on Evan Carter, Leody Taveras, Adolis Garcia in the outfield, and Langford as the fourth outfielder and DH. Totally possible. I think, you know, if he has a great spring, I know for a fact that they, you know, they discussed like what would it take to get Wyatt Langford on this World Series roster last year when they had the injury. You know, so I guess that's bad news for Ezekiel Duran stands as he becomes basically their utility guy on the infield if he makes the team. But just not knowing that right now makes me a little bit nervous. The guy I'm not nervous about is Evan Carter. I just love the extreme plate discipline. This is Joey Votoian plate discipline. He doesn't quite have the raw power you might want from a guy who's going to hit 25 plus homers, but he has enough raw power and he gets to it so well because I think of that extreme plate discipline. If you think about it, like if you can only hit the ball 108, but you only swing at balls that go, you know, 95 plus, which he has a nice hard hit rate because you never swing, you know, really outside the zone. Then you're going to get to your game, your raw power more often. So I think this might end up with 20 homers. I saw a comparison to Kyle Tucker. I don't know. I would want to see a little bit more raw power before he's Kyle Tucker. But Kyle Tucker light, you know, like I think the batting average will be good. The OBP will be amazing. And I think we're talking about sort of a 260, 20-30 guy. Which is beyond any of the projections, but it's sort of what I believe he can do.
I think it's well within reach for Carter. I think some people are worried about possible lost playing time against lefties. That could be one little leak for him in the short term, but you really don't want to mess around with a player like this because he's a cornerstone. Like you don't need to take a player like this in and out of the lineup. You can do the simple thing, move him down in the order against lefties, move somebody else up. Go that route. See what he can do, right? Like, don't mess up the future just because you're trying to optimize slightly.
I love small sample platoon splits. My God. So he has a 54.5 strikeout rate against lefties and a -78 WRC plus, which suggests he's 178% worse than league average. It's 11 plate appearances and... so I would expect that he gets some playing time against lefties to begin the season. If it continues to be that bad, yeah.
I think the most interesting player on this team, just in terms of wondering if there's another level, is probably Josh Jung, right? You can see the star potential in Carter. It's okay if he doesn't get there right away. Langford should be among the favorites for AL Rookie of the Year. I think we have fair expectations at this point for both Semien and Adelis Garcia. But you see Josh Jung going, we did our third base preview a few weeks ago, and you look at him compared to the oatmeal-y types, the Alex Bregmans, the Nolan Arenados. I don't know how those guys are oatmeal now, but they've been so good for
That's
so
what
long.
Happens old, later in your career, I guess.
It just happens. Jung seems like the kind of guy that the range of outcomes is still wide. I've compared him in the past to Austin Riley because there's some things about him that make me think he could still take another step or two at the plate and be that kind of player, eventually be this early round masher in fantasy and a guy that actually maybe gets some MVP votes in real life. I think that's in his range of outcomes. But what's the flaw? Like, what's the main thing Josh Jung has to change if he's going to turn the corner, get that K rate down, and become even more dangerous as someone in the middle third of this Rangers lineup?
Yeah, my eye goes to that K rate right away. And if you go to his pitch type values, you can see mashes, fastballs, does, you know, scratch level work against the rest of the pitches, and is a fairly big minus in sliders. And so, you know, if you're on YouTube, you're getting to see one of the most remarkable rolling graphs I've ever seen, which is a rolling graph of Josh Jung's 15 game rolling strikeout rate and slider percentage. And these two lines are just on top of each other. Like, they are the same line. And I don't think I've ever seen something mapped so strongly. There, it is weird to then say, okay, if his K percentage just goes up with the slider percentage, why don't they just throw more sliders? Well, in July, he must have sat slider because he hit 407, 429, 593 against sliders. And if you're looking at this graph, that corresponds with a time in which they stopped throwing him sliders. So I don't know. I'm kind of two minds when I look at this, which is just like, well, that's worrisome. It seems like he has trouble with sliders. But then at least for 1 month, he was able to flip the switch and destroy sliders. So I'm going to chalk this up to, you know, he's a young player that, you know, the league made an adjustment to throw him tons of sliders, and he made an adjustment back. Okay, I'm going to sit slider sometimes at least. And that adjustment back was enough for pitchers to step off the sliders a little bit. So, I'm going to go with a possible breakout season with a 25% strikeout rate with him. I'm going to see him take a leap forward there, and that's going to push his batting average up to 275, 280. So we're going to get a guy who might hit 280 to 30 homers this year. And I think that's a pretty exciting leap forward for him.
And I think the thing you have to like, too, is because they put tons of runs on the board, you're getting runs, you're getting RBIs, big juice on those categories as well for Josh Jung. So nice to see him have that run where he was handling sliders. To me, it's sort of like proof of concept. He can hit the pitch. It's just a matter of getting into situations where he can more, consistently predict when he's going to see one.
Right. And like sort of theoretically what you'll get at a peak season out of him is just a peak anticipation. Now, people want to call it guessing or whatever, but peak anticipation, where he's like, oh, I can give you my super hard swing for the fastball in these times when I think a fastball is coming, but I can also put that swing I put on sliders in July, I can put that guy out there too. So if you know, it is difficult though, because as I talked to Austin Riley about, you know, getting caught in between fastballs and sitting sliders, is you just don't want to be caught in that in-between space where you're whiffing at both. And so it's a timing issue. It's a anticipation issue, but this is the type of thing that I think players get better at as they get older. This is one of those learned skills.
With all of this, Goldilocks porridge scale on the 86 wins from Pecota: too hot, too cold, or just right?
Too cold. Too cold. I see them being a wild card, winner. And having 88, 89, 90, more 90 wins.
Yeah, their playoff odds, 52.8% by Pecota.
You're asking them to just stay afloat with some credible veterans until they get some heavy hitters back in the rotation. Once they have those guys, like if there's a September where they're running Max Scherzer and Jacob deGrom out there, you know, along with the rest of the rotation, I'm going to be excited about that.
Yeah, this is a team that was third in all of Major League Baseball last year in runs scored, 881 runs. They're probably better with Carter and Langford for a full season. They were tied for fifth in barrel rate. Only the Dodgers and Braves played more runs than the Rangers last year. That's their bread and butter. It's still there. I think barring a combination of catastrophic injuries to the likes of, you know, Gray and Heaney and the starters they need, Eovaldi, they can keep it afloat. If multiple of those guys join the already injured guys on the IL for a prolonged stint,
that puts a lot of pressure on their player development on the pitching side, which hasn't produced as many wins as their player development on the hitting side.
I'm with you, though. I think the 86 felt just a little bit too cold for the defending champions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's move on to a team that, well, I don't think they're even close. It's the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. It's,
what's the Pecota number on them?
It's a sad state. It's 74.5 is the number that Pecota spit out for them. That's a 4.5% chance of making the playoffs. I mean, it's bad enough to lose Ohtani, which for a long time sort of seemed inevitable. But this is not the bounce back winter you were hoping for. Okay, we lost Ohtani, but we did this, this, and this. Like, they had Ron Washington as their manager. Nice to see Wash get another shot. I could see them being a pain for the other teams in this division, right? I could see them being a team that still plays it out in August and September and does some things reasonably well. But yikes. Like, how underwhelmed are you if you have to root for this team just based on what's happened over these last 6 months?
I have very little to circle on this team where I can be like, this is exciting. Check out what's happening here. It's not the rotation. I do like Robert Stevenson, and Matt Moore's fine. I think it'll be an average-ish bullpen. I don't think it has great depth. The position player group leaves, like, there's a couple position players that I think are really bad. And, the one place that I would circle, I guess, is up the middle. It's nice to be good up the middle. I like Logan Ohapi. I like Zach Neto, and I like Mike Trout.
You like Mike Trout? Yeah.
I mean, like Mike Trout. I'm alone on an island here. I know nobody else likes Mike Trout, but I like Mike Trout. So it's nice that they're good up the middle. Their corner situation is atrocious on the infield. And in terms of, like, pieces that go along with those three pieces, Renjifo, Brandon Drury, Taylor Ward, they're okay. Like, that's decent. But, you know, like, I don't think anything I've said here is sort of top 10. Like, there's no unit that's top 10. Even my up the middle grouping, with the age that Mike Trout's at, the way that you kind of expect him to miss some of the season, I think it's hard to call Logan Ohap, Zach Neto, and Mike Trout, like, one of the top 10 up the middle trios.
Right.
It could be borderline. Maybe they're 10th, you know?
It could be fine. I think that's the area where you have some hope. It's good to be strong in those places. It's relatively easy if you're willing to spend, and the Angels generally are willing to spend, it's relatively easy to find help on the corners. If that's all they needed, you could have a little more optimism. But the problem comes back to starting pitching, which we'll get to in just a minute. I still think Trout is borderline elite as a hitter. He doesn't steal bases the way he used to. That's fine. Projections are still really good. They just need to find a better way, and maybe this will be part of Ohtani leaving to keep him healthy. DH him more often. If he still wants to play some center field, fine, but maybe a third of his playing time should come as a DH now to take some of the wear and tear off of his body. That might be a way to actually get more out of him over the course of the season, to push over the 545 plate appearances you see projected. Ohtani was so good coming off of the labrum tear in his shoulder. I think that's a really, really good sign that he went through what should be a normal offseason. I think when you look at Neto, he got to the big leagues so quickly, but it made a little more sense than what they did with Nolan Chanuel. We've talked about the quality of contact Chanuel made upon arrival last year and how problematic that is, especially for a corner infielder. So there's a lot of work to be done there. There's obviously the Anthony Rendon situation. It's truly an albatross at this point. A lot of questions as far as, you know, what they're going to get from him over the course of the year and what kind of relationship he'll eventually have with Ron Washington. A really good player for a long time. It just hasn't worked out for him so far with the Angels. It like, if you're going to tell yourself a story that this team overachieves, part of it is Ohtani and Neto taking steps forward, not unreasonable. Trout staying healthy, not totally unreasonable. But other parts of it are finding things like Rendon getting back out there for 450 or 500 plate appearances and just being something close to the player they were expecting when they signed him. And it's Taylor Ward being a little more of the 2022 Taylor Ward than the 2023 version, right? Because before that injury that ended his season, Taylor Ward had taken a small step back. So I think you have to round up in just a few too many places to see their lineup getting considerably better this year.
Yeah, I was looking for this graph that someone had put together when I mentioned that Mickey Moniak was an outlier among outliers. But somebody had put together a walk and strikeout rate, just a simple plot of all players, and Mickey Moniak was like the one that's all the way down in the worst quadrant with the highest strikeout rate and lowest walk rate. So, you know, it's such a bad approach that I went and kind of looked through, you know, different players. You can do this thing on Fangraphs where you go through the, it's called the year-to-year leaderboards. If you go to leaders, it's called season stat grid. And you can change the toggles just to see like who improved their chase rate from season to season, their O swing. And you can just sort it and look at them. And I looked at all the guys who last year decreased their chase rate by 5 to 10%. And all of them were people that had chased less in the past and were going back to basically where they used to be. And so the only one that kind of really took a big step forward was Adolis Garcia, which we've talked about, you know, that being kind of huge. But you also wonder, how much is Adolis Garcia going to regress? It's not like we've seen him reach this new level and stay there for a long time, you know? And so my question is just, for a guy who swings at 50% of the balls that he sees outside the zone, and for him, you know, he even knows that's a problem. And he just said, I think at the Angels Fan Fest or whatever it was, I saw some comments that he wants to swing at better pitches this year. It's such an extreme problem that I'm not optimistic that he's going to solve it. And so for me, he's, what you call like a second division starter, you know, like somebody who would play for a bad team, but wouldn't play for a good team. You know, I hate to say it that way, but
fair summary though. I mean, the skills just haven't been there to support a big step forward so far. Good to be aware of the problem. Hope for his sake, he can make some adjustments. We talked about it during the very last part of our outfield preview, but I actually thought Trey Cabbage was kind of interesting given the way the organizational outfield depth chart was made up. The Angels didn't find him as interesting as I did. He is now in the Astros organization. So power speed guy at AAA, a little old for the level, of course, but now on a division rivals roster and almost inevitably going to hit some home runs against the Angels at some point this year.
And I think that they have options. So it's like you could say, okay, we're going to go with the Oscar Colas Lodum thing, and we're going to just take a guy that has opportunity and, you know, isn't necessarily that good, but like, you know, he's going to play. And if you look at some of his projections, you say, oh, you could hit 20 homers and steal 10 bases. Like, you know, that's value, dude. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, like Joe Adell has problems with strikeout rate and walk rate, but in fact, he has a lower swinging strike rate than Moniak. He has a lower strikeout rate for his career than Moniak. He has a lower chase rate than Moniak. He hits the ball like 5 miles an hour harder at the top ends, even gets to barrels as much or more. So, you know, they're similarly flawed guys, but Adell's flaws are not as bad in the same places. And then you have, you know, Aaron Hicks, who's boring, but has proven to be a capable starter on good teams. And last year was an above average bat, you know? So I don't know. I don't even know that Moniak makes it to the full amount of playing time he needs to get to those projections. But I want to say something nice. So I'm going to talk about Zach Neto for a second. And I'm going to talk about the fact that he has above average contact rate abilities, above average walk rates he's shown in the minors that didn't show last year, but did show in an above average chase rate for Zach Neto. A slightly above average max EV, not an elite one. A slightly above average barrel rate, but not an elite one. Above average speed, but not elite speed. This to me looks like someone who can be above average in every facet of the game. And one thing that happened late in the season was he had a back injury. And if you look at his strikeout rate, his hard hit rate, and just overall production, they all went in the tank after he had that back injury. So I'm thinking good health. You know, a back injury could be something that happens when you take a guy that was drafted in 2022 and you stick him in the major leagues and you ask him to play every day. You know, it's just sort of repeated use and more fatigue than he was used to. I say in a second attempt at the big leagues, we see a lot better out of Zach Neto. And the projections are for him to hit 250 with 20 homers, 330 OBP, 10 stolen bases. Like, this is already a capable back end starting shortstop, front end middle infielder in fantasy. And for them, I think the first in a long stretch of like, this is at least an above average, you know, starting shortstop in the big leagues.
Yeah, I'm with you on Neto. I think there could be a nice step forward for him here in his first full season. And that back injury is something that I kind of overlooked a little bit while kind of taking my first inventory of Neto from his rookie season. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind for appropriate context. The pitching might be a little better than some people think. That it's not a compliment. Some people just think their pitching's horrible. Basically,
it might be below average, but not horrible.
Not horrible. I think Reed Detmers is just what you see is what you get at this point. But Griffin Canning being healthy and pretty effective last year is a good sign for them. And Chase Silseth continues to be someone that I'm intrigued by because he's going to get chances to start here that he might not get in a more competitive situation. But that might be the best thing for his long-term development. I think he could make it as a starter. It might be bumpy, but we see flashes from him that give me some hope, especially for some deeper leagues. If you're just trying to find a good arm that's available, you know, way outside the top 25 rounds.
Yeah, subscribers have access to the pitching report, the new pitching report. Just look through the link, the Google Doc link off of my rankings, and you'll see the new revised stuff plus. And, you know, if you sort Chase's pitches by, you know, number and you look at it, you start to see what the problem is. His four-seam fastball is decidedly below average by not only the physical characteristics of the pitch, but also his locations. So it's a bad pitch and it's a problem. And what happens is the sinker isn't great by stuff plus, but he locates it well. The split finger is a great pitch. That is a really good pitch. The slider is okay, but he doesn't locate it well. So what happens is You know, against righties, he has a plan. He can locate the sinker well, and then he can finish them off with a slider that's outside the zone or a split finger in or out of the zone. So that works against righties. Against lefties, he has this problem where he can't locate his four-seam well. And what you see against lefties is his walk rate goes from about league average to 12.5% against lefties. His FIP against righties is 4.5. Against lefties, it's 6.5. And so despite having an out pitch, like a split finger that works, he doesn't have the arsenal that works against lefties. So I would hope for just better locations on his four-seam fastball. I'm not, what is his, what were his grades coming up on that, on command? I don't think that he was terrible. 40-40 command. Yeah, I guess he was kind of terrible there. So, I mean, you're hoping for something that he hasn't necessarily shown, but the pieces are kind of there. One thing I did notice, and I'm going to be coming out with a piece soon about five young pitchers that can take a step forward. You do need to have at least one hard pitch you can command. The sinker showed up there. What if he just uses a sinker some against lefties when he needs a strike? You know, you're not supposed to throw it in certain areas, but maybe he can command it well. Maybe he can throw it in those areas where you can dance around and find your way through lefties. I mean, he's never going to be dominant against lefties, but if you can just get a couple sinkers in there for called strikes, boom, now you're in there for the splitter. So it's nice that he has an out pitch, and it's nice he can command one hard pitch. That's actually a starter kit for things working out.
I was thinking maybe the cutter could be part of the solution, though, to lefties as well. If he can command that, I mean, we know how much the cutter changed everything for Corbin Burns a few years back. Doesn't always work quite that well, but early career Corbin Burns had a major, major problem with lefties. Like, got just toasted by them. So you got to find something that works.
Because his if you rank his hard pitches, it's cutter, sinker, four seam.
Mm-hmm.
And when he first came up, he was trying to be four seam to lefties, just like Chase.
Yeah. So, hey, having seen it work, that's why I'm like, ooh, he at least throws a cutter. Maybe there's something there yeah. with the winter that could unlock
that's
something.
That's something to listen for in the spring, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm focusing on the cutter. You start watch some at bats against lefties, see what he does.
Be cool to see him figure some things out. 74.5 wins from Pecota for the Angels. Too hot, too cold, just right.
Too hot.
Oh, you got him under 74.5?
I think that, yes, that's what the numbers say, but I think it's just going to be one of those seasons, and I don't buy into narrative a ton, but like when I see the Angels and the A's coming this season, I see just sadness. Like, how are you going to go to Anthony Rendon, if you're Ron Washington, and get him to buy in when you just lost Shohei Ohtani? You know what I mean? Like,
he wasn't fully bought in with everybody there.
Right. You couldn't buy in with one of the greatest players of all time, maybe, like on your roster, maybe two of the top, like 10, 15 players of all time. You couldn't buy in. So like, oh yeah, this year, dude, come on, we need you. And then the A's, like, you know, a whole litany of reasons that's going to be depressing. And I just think that that's not going to lead to a great work environment. You're not going to want to come into work. Ramon Laureano's worst season as an A came the season he really just wanted to leave.
Got really into coffee, right?
Yeah, that's when he said, he told me getting into coffee. So it's like, you know, that's what they're all going to have these stories. Going into that clubhouse as a writer is going to be awful. I'm going to have to do it. And I don't like, I'll find people to talk to, and it's still a great job. I'm just saying that if it's not great for me and I get to go home and nobody yells at me on the field for being bad and I don't lose games in front of everybody, then it's going to be bad for the players. So I think there's like this like added layer. And then the last bit is if they aren't good and they're worse than they're expected or even just play to these projections, they are going to sell.
Oh, yes. Any useful reliever will once again be moved. Maybe we'd see Mike Trout possibly get moved. It's possible.
Yeah, I mean, like if Carlos Estevez is not your closer, or he's, you know, he's on an expiring contract, he's an easy guy to trade. You know, it's anything like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Ross Stripling and Alex Wood. I know I'm jumping ahead, but like, you know, these guys that are on contracts, if you're not going well, then, you know, somebody else can use you. So, you know, that's something that Billy Beane said is like, if you can be good enough to not sell at the deadline, you can actually gain wins in this after the deadline, because you, even if I just sitting in one place, other teams are selling and getting worse, you know? So there is some aspect to the projections that's not going to, they're not going to model that out. They're going to model the players that are on that team. They're going to model sales. You know, they're not going to be like, oh, and then they'll lose Carlos Tevez at the trade deadline. So then they'll get even worse. I think that's too much to ask of a model. So I will take the under. And that's also what you happen is the models always push you towards the middle because of that and because of regression and because of, you know, they want the meaty outcomes. They want the middle. So, you know, I could see 200 lost teams in this division.
I'll stay just right on the 74.5. So okay. I'm a little less disaster mode on the Angels than you are, but that's not much of an endorsement. We led with strength. We started with the Rangers. That was the important thing about getting these two teams also.
Oh, I like Canning.
Yeah, I'm with you on Canning.
I had to say something a little bit nice at the end there.
Of course.
It's going to be a disaster.
I like River Canning a little bit.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's move on to the A's. It's,
man.
Just think about doing 30 team previews and saving them for the end, right? You'd have the fatigue.
You'd be looking thinking like, about it.
No, yes, that's why we just wanted to get through it and leave teams people are more excited about for the remaining days of the series. 64.8 wins is the projection, almost 10 full wins behind the Angels. I don't think they're that much worse than the Angels. That's the thing that I think is kind of funky about the A's, because I think I believe some of the younger players they're going to lean on give them a little extra juice, but let's be realistic here. This is a team that was dead last in runs scored last year. 585. Next closest, the White Sox at 641. That is a huge gap from the basement to 29th in that category. Why do you like their young hitters? You start looking at the leaderboard, you know, ADP board we got up on the screen. Zach Galloff, we talked a lot about in our second base preview, looks legit. Power, speed, everyday guy. Looks like a cornerstone for this rebuild. I'm excited about him. I think Shea Langeliers takes a step forward this year. The power's already there. I think the overall offensive value is a little bit underprojected right now. We'll see if I'm actually right about that. And then there's a couple of wild cards. You know, Estuary Ruiz would count as a wild card. Fantasy people love him because of the speed. I get it. You could see 60-plus bags if he's out there every single day playing great defense in center field. Plays such great defense that he took the S right off of Seth Brown's name in front of us, which is just fantastic. So it's like that trio, mostly Galloff and Langeliers, Ruiz just being kind of a fun, speedy center fielder. And then the next wave is starting to show up. We saw Tyler Soderstrom debut last year. it wasn't great. He's been young for the level everywhere he's been. I think between catcher and first base, he gets a ton of playing time this year, even if he gets another taste of Triple A at some point. They're probably getting an upgrade.
Sort of competent power patience guy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, they get something out of him.
I think he'll be kind of a two-ish win player.
Get a little something out of Brent Rooker. But it's kind of like, what do you get from Soderstrom, Jordan Diaz, Lawrence Butler, and even Daryl Hernandez? Because those are the kinds of guys that could pop ahead of their projection and make this team a little bit more watchable than they were in 2023.
Yeah, and each has their own flaws. As much as I like Jordan Diaz, you know, because he makes good contact and hits the ball hard, you know, despite not really having good patience, being really ultra aggressive, there are plenty of players who've played that combination of skills to, like, you know, like a 250, 300 OBP, 400 slugging, which I could, that's totally attainable for Diaz. The defense that I scouted, I thought was not really capable anywhere. So I don't know if DH is open for him or first base on this team. So that makes me a little bit nervous. If you're talking about Lawrence Butler, I think the flaw is pretty obvious, is that the strikeout rate, you know, he's had some okay strikeout rates, but the swinging strike rate has always been fairly high. And so this might be that kind of guy who has holes that major league pitchers can expose better than minor league pitchers. And so despite Lawrence Butler having an 18-19% strikeout rate in Double A and Triple A last year, he comes to the big leagues, 27% in the big leagues. Projections are 25-27%, 28% for Butler. If he can turn that around a little bit, his chase rate's not too bad. He's got the physical skills in terms of power and speed. That's the thing you're looking for, is a spring. And that's something you can see in the spring to some extent. Maybe he'll strike out less in spring. That every day that he doesn't strike out twice in a game in spring, you know, makes him that much more interesting to me. And then the last one, Daryl Hernandez, you know, interesting young rookie. I put up this comparison that I was just looking at AAA numbers, because we've got some batted ball stuff for AAA numbers. And so I wanted to compare Nick Allen and Daryl Hernandez in AAA, you know, because Nick Allen's played some in the majors. I just wanted to see what that'd be like. And in terms of strikeout rate, both of them struck out 10% of the time. So they both put good wood on the ball in terms of bat to ball. Daryl Hernandez had a 120 ISO and Nick Allen had a 190 ISO, which is, I think, points to why you need to be careful looking at minor league ISOs. There are lots of different ways to get to those numbers. And I think Nick Allen did it with his feet, and Daryl Hernandez does it a little bit more with his bat. And the reason I say that is Daryl Hernandez's max exit velocity in the minors last year was 112, and for Nick Allen, it was 105.8. Daryl Hernandez's hard hit rate was 38.5%. Nick Allen's was 29.5%. So I think Daryl Hernandez hits the ball harder. Nick Allen is pretty much a whiz with the glove. And so if you're watching for something this spring, you're an A's fan, or you're scouting for your team, your fantasy team, I would actually watch defense. Because I think if an Hernandez can play good defense, Allen turns into a defensive sub, basically. And Hernandez gets the job every day, because I think he hits the ball harder. And Nick Allen has shown that I don't know if he has a major league bat that he's swinging.
I don't think he is a major league hitter, but the A's have given him a few chances. The three-year age gap for Hernandez versus Allen, too, I think is encouraging. Hernandez could still get a little stronger, unlock a little bit more power as he continues to grow in the next couple of seasons. So I kind of like him as a really deep league option who should take over that position early, claim it as his own. The big question with Esteury Ruiz is going to be, you know, the quality of the contact. Is there any reason to believe that he can start to hit the ball harder and do a little bit more damage to be more than just a speedster who relies heavily on his legs to do almost everything he can to contribute offensively?
Yeah, I tried to look at his 15-game rolling averages, and he did try to lift the ball a little bit in the end of the season, hit the ball a tiny bit harder, and he's been recorded as saying, and the organization's been saying, that he's trying to get to his power more. So, you know, that's an interesting thing. The other thing is I sorted this table here by hard hit rate, and you just take 300 plate appearances. Hard hit rate is how many times you hit it over 95 miles an hour, and over 95 miles an hour, like all of your outcomes are better. And so hard hit rate, the bottom of the hard hit rate leaderboard for the big leagues last year, 300 plate appearances, is Stephen Kwan, Geraldo Perdomo, Estuary Ruiz third, Tony Kemp, Adam Frazier, Miles Straw, Jake McCarthy, Whit Merrifield, Luis Arraez, Bryce Turang. I mean, Luis Arraez is a unicorn. You take that one off and it's not a list you want to be on. It's a poor, and like Stephen Kwan, also both of those guys, Arraez and Kwan, make so much more contact than Ruiz. So like their way forward is clear. Ruiz needs to get off this list. The only thing that I can say that he leaps off the page a little bit on this list, he has a 109.5 max EV, and the closest one to him is Jake McCarthy, 108.5. And the average on this list is almost like 105. So he does have more raw power. Shown it sometimes in the minors. It's like what percentage likelihood do you think of him having a 6% barrel rate next year? That'd be almost double what he had this year. It would be, if you have a 6% barrel rate, you can hit 18 homers.
I think it's like 10 to 15% chance he gets up there.
It's not zero.
Because we've seen him, while being young for his age, at a few stops in the minors, get to double-digit power. Like, that's been there. We've seen some patience. Like, we've seen some interesting skills all kind of scattered around. I think the thing with Ruiz that's tricky, do big league pitchers with premium velocity just not fear him and just fill up the zone against them in a way that keeps him from walking the way he did when he was younger, right? Like, can you be tricked by the minor league walk rates in a case like this? When you don't hit the ball hard, pitchers will challenge you more. Pitchers with good command can fill up the zone, be around the zone, and so you know your walk rate never gets back to those levels. That is possible here, but I have moved a little bit, and I think maybe you have too, whereas last year we were kind of like, No Estuary Ruiz for fantasy purposes. Just can't do it. It's too desperate. It's only if we're way behind on bags and just need to throw the Hail Mary. Now you could start to see a little bit more falling into place. But there's still a world. There's a range of outcomes where if he struggles, he could also lose his job. Like that's in the profile because there's so much chaos here.
It's not a plus glove.
Right.
And so if you're profiling as an 80 WRC plus corner outfielder, I don't know, all the speed in the world isn't going to help you.
So really, really wide range of outcomes. But if he just hangs on to the job for even a year and plays every day, tons of bags, probably a batting average that doesn't hurt you, non-zero pop with the possibility for more. We're finding some things to like with Estuary Ruiz. The pitching is the problem here too, right? We talked about the additions recently of Alex Wood and Ross Stripling. That should give them some innings. Probably 130 for each is a reasonable sort of expectation. I know you like Joe Boyle, and you can see the stuff numbers have been fantastic. JP Sears is the other guy that I keep finding in deep leagues. I'm saying, he's still there. I need innings. I can stream him at home. I see the case for it. There's some times last season when I watched Luis Medina, and it was working. And I was kind of like, whoa, hey, like this might be something. There might be an actual starter here that can be useful every fifth day. But then you'd watch a few more starts and you'd see the downside. You'd see the shaky command kind of rear its head. So is this core group of starting five, and they're going to need a lot more than five starters to get through the season, but is this core group of five any better than what they started last season with?
I wasn't expecting that question for some reason. I guess I didn't see it. I didn't read the rundown well enough. Is it better than? Yes, it has some competent veterans in it, and Stripling and Wood. I think Blackburn's going to bounce back a little bit, and he's competent. So I would say there's more competency in Sears, Blackburn, Wood, and Stripling. It's like there's some competency there, like at least not below replacement level. And then, and for me, the upside is represented by the two guys who are the wildest. And so what you were saying with the large range of outcomes for Esturi Ruiz, it's interesting because this is a team that I think acquires players that have lower ranges of outcomes. They want to, because they acquire like guys who've been good in AAA and are in the middle of their careers. You know, that they do that a lot. And yet we're talking about Esturi Ruiz having a huge range of outcomes. And I think Joe Boyle and Luis Medina have anywhere from, you know, being top end starters to being relievers or worse. So I'm going to bet on Joe Boyle. I referenced earlier that, you know, you need to have one hard pitch you can command. It was in the Chase Silthus conversation. And the way that I found this is I looked at 55 breakout seasons in the Stuff Plus era, young players under 25 years old with an ERA, with a Sierra under 4, you know, so breakout seasons, 50 innings at least. And what I found was all but 5 of them had a fastball they could locate above average. Joe Boyle doesn't have that. So that's bad. But on that list of 5, 4 out of the 5 could command their sliders at above average rate. So this is a slider league. You can't always locate your fastball well. If you need a strike, sometimes you go to the slider. That might work for Joe Boyle. And I think basically what the A's did was ramp up his slider usage in counts when he needed a strike. Just as an aside, the only player that had a breakout season that could not command his 2 fastballs or a slider at above average rate? Ashby.
Oh.
Just had to throw that one in there. But I think Joe Boyle has a way forward. I know it's poor command and that it'll anger Reds fans if he does find it, because command is one of those things when you watch, you're just like, it's so hard to watch the bad command. And you're just, I get it when people are like, DL Hall, not going to be a starter. I've watched these games. You can't find the plate. Not good. And, you know, Joe Boyle, not good. Because you watch it and you see him walk 3 or 4 guys and you're like, I don't want this guy on my team. But there are ways to mitigate that. There are ways to train for it. Luis Medina did not locate any of his pitches at an above average rate last year. So there's not one pitch where you can be like, well, at least he can locate this one when he needs to. Boyle had that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a little more stability is the right way to describe what they're doing in the rotation. The thing that is brutal about their organizational construction from a talent perspective is that they've got so little back from the big trades that they made. That's where you'd say by now the A's should start to have a good system. They don't.
A guy they got from this trade or a guy they got from this trade.
It's just not like that. And even some of the early draft picks they've had, they haven't been hitting on those. Like this is weird. Like this level of dysfunction is actually sort of new, because for a long time, the efficiency, the ability to draft, the ability to trade well, those were things that you could sort of look at and say, oh, the A's do that. When they dip, they're going to bounce back quickly. This is a really slow climb from the bottom. Like, I still think they're the clear worst team in this division. It just might not be by 10 games. It might be by 6 or 7, which is really splitting hairs. Like, what's the difference? We're still the worst team in the division.
Yeah, I guess if you want a conspiracy theory or some tea or just you want me to like sort of walk off a little bit past just what the numbers say, kind of a read of mine on this is that the league kind of figured out what the A's like to do and started manipulating them. Mm. And, you know, so I have this weird idea that the Brewers traded for Esturi Ruiz to trade him to the A's.
We need to get a confirmation of that at some point.
I mean, it'd be amazing. I don't think that that's something that anyone would ever even let me say that, you know, oh, I have a source that said that, yeah, that totally happened, you know?
10 years this, later, yeah.
Maybe after people are retired.
2034, maybe we'll know.
But, you know, I think it becomes a little bit easier to trade with the A's if you're like, oh, they like guys who, you know, performed well in AAA. And are 25, you know, You can put together a nice little package of guys that you don't value internally for whatever reason, and prize them. That being said, Cole Irvin for Darryl Hernandez doesn't seem like a terrible trade.
No, that's the kind of stuff you'd expect them to do kind of on repeat based on more of their past behavior.
Right. So maybe it's just a short term. Maybe it's that other player development and coaching has taken a leap forward. One thing you do see when you look at the A's is they say the same coaches. The coaches that are at the major league level went all the way through the minors. They don't fire people. They're very loyal to their people. I think part of it is they don't pay well. So, you know, once they get somebody to take the job and seems competent and, you know, then you just keep them in that job. I'm not saying that I would love to like come in and fire everybody, but like, you know, you have to be a little bit more cutthroat when you're not getting results. And that's how you stay stagnant as an organization, is you don't hire, you don't put enough emphasis on hiring. You don't put enough emphasis on pushing forward, and you kind of sit in your laurels and just, you know, have the same guys you've had forever.
Last thought here on the A's. I mean, the bullpen, I think Lucas Erceg was a good story last year. Danny Jimenez shows occasional flashes. The big key is going to be Mason Miller, right? If Mason Miller stays healthy, he could be one of the best relievers in baseball, right? Is that a fair ceiling statement?
No, 100%. He could, you know, Felix Bautista, like he could just jump and like all of a sudden be, oh, hey, he's the first or second best closer in the league. That's how nasty he is.
I really like the possibility of him popping and being a top five closer this year. Team's not going to win a ton, but when they win, they're going to win close games. They'll generate enough opportunities for that to happen. It's more about Mason Miller avoiding the IL for a full season. It'd be huge if he could actually do that for them. 64.8 wins from Pecota on the A's. Too hot, too cold, or just right?
I think it's just right, but I think actually too hot. I think it'll be 62.
You're really going for the 200 lost teams.
Yeah.
In the AL West. All right. Well, hey, I'm on board with
maybe
that.
Maybe it's 63. They climb their way out and have a great win at the end of the season to keep that 100 off.
It seems like something rebuilding teams want to avoid. The yeah, optics totally. Of the 100 lost season. Feels like another just right for me. So I don't know. Feeling pretty good about Pecota. At least on day one, I'll get angry about it over the next couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Wait, let me just look at the Brewers one.
Oh, don't worry. I've got thoughts on that one. Yeah, you're going to see the number and you're going to understand why I'm mad about it.
Oh, yeah. You disagree with that one.
I've got a lot of problems with that number. That'll be for a future episode. If you want to sign up for The Athletic, this is a great time to do it. TheAthletic.com/ratesandbarrels. $2 a month for the first year. Gets you everything. Eno's pitching rankings, all the fantasy baseball stuff we do, all the real baseball stuff, plus coverage of other sports. We cover a lot of sports at The Athletic. So check us out, TheAthletic.com/ratesandbarrels. On Twitter, you can find Eno at Eno Saris. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. The pod is at Rates and Barrels. We've got lots of team previews to roll out. And other great episodes interspersed in there, too. But that's going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We're back with you on Wednesday.
Thanks for listening.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.